The views expressed on The Final Straw Radio do not necessarily reflect those of Asheville FM, Friends of Community Radio, or any of the affiliate radio stations airing the show. You're listening to WSFMLP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full calendar of events and a link to some of their catalog of books and zines can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop.
This week we'll be hearing an interview with Steve of the Inside Outside Alliance, a project based out of Durham, which focuses on those incarcerated and those left behind on the outside in the Durham County Jail. About the deaths of Dennis McMurray and Matthew McCain in the Durham County Jail during this last year, as well as other deaths within those being held at that facility, and what the Inside Outside Alliance and other community activists are doing to try to bring awareness, add support to the families, and apply pressure for accountability to the Sheriff's Department, which runs the Durham County Jail.
But first, the following is an update from our friends at No New Animal Lab, taken from their website, nonewanimallab.com. On January 29th, No New Animal Lab, with representation from the Civil Liberties Defense Center, filed an anti-SLAPP special motion to strike against injunctions filed on behalf of two executives of Skanska USA. Skanska and its key decision makers have been the subject of a year-long protest campaign organized under the banner of No New Animal Lab for their $90 million contract to build a large underground animal research lab for the University of Washington. Skanska executives at the corporation's Portland office filed for injunctions against four activists and No New Animal Lab in an attempt to stifle the growing national protests. Such lawsuits are known as SLAPs, strategic lawsuits against public participation, and are often used by corporations against protest movements in an attempt to chill dissent and disrupt campaign organizing. Rather than outright criminalizing protests activity, corporations attempt to exploit the legal system, dragging grassroots activists through frivolous civil court proceedings and draining and redirecting both time and material resources. SLAPs exist to shrewdly muzzle movements that seek to hold corporations and their executives accountable and are backdoor attempts to legislate unreasonable restrictions upon speech and assembly. Quote, "The campaign against Skanska is about challenging power, the power to callously decide the fate of thousands, the power to construct lives of suffering, captivity, and pain, and the power to evade accountability through the impersonal structure of corporations," said a spokesperson for No New Animal Lab. Quote, "When you challenge power, you get a response. These SLAPP injunctions are just that. A response from Skanska, one of the largest corporations of its kind. The No New Animal Lab campaign interprets these lawsuits as a measure of its effectiveness." End quote. The No New Animal Lab campaign has grown substantially in the last year, and the pressure against Skanska is at an all-time high. In mid-January, hundreds of people from all over the country converged in New York to protest the company's U.S. headquarters and CEO and President Richard Cavallaro, and Skanska's largest U.S. investor, the Vanguard Group. One way you can help right now is to make a donation to the campaign. Every penny goes directly to grassroots organizing and helping with legal costs. Support means everything in moments like these. To donate to this cause and to learn more about this campaign, you can go to their website at nonewanimallab.com and click on the red Donate tab on their page. And to hear the interview that we conducted with members of this campaign, you can visit our website at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and search No New Animal Lab.
We're speaking with Steve, a member of the Inside Outside Alliance. IOA is made up of folks with incarcerated family in the Durham County Jail in North Carolina, friends and concerns community members as well, and they work to amplify and organize inside and outside, hence the name of the jail walls, to challenge the punishment that's being faced by those on the inside. Thanks a lot for taking the time to chat, Steve.
Sure. Thank you.
Pleasure. So recently there have been a renewal of demonstrations outside of and concerning the Durham County Jail under the auspices of No More Jail Deaths. Can you talk about the lives and circumstances of Matthew McCain and Dennis McMurray?
Sure, I could talk a little bit about both of them. On the morning of January 19th, we became aware that a inmate at the Durham Jail had died. We were told this by two people who were in contact with directly on the inside, and so we were wondering, you know, we were basically seeing what we were going to do about it, when it was going to be made public that this happened. What happened in the case of Matthew McCain was he had some existing health conditions. That is, he was a diabetic and he had epilepsy, which was well known to the jail. But the problem was he's been in the jail since August, and he wasn't always getting the insulin that he needed, and he also the medicine that he was supposed to get for epilepsy, from what I've been told, was not the proper one, and he also often got too much of that. So some different kinds of medical issues related to that, where he wasn't getting the right amount of insulin or wasn't getting it at all, and then he was getting too much of the epilepsy medicine. In any case, there was and another inmate had been in an altercation the previous Friday, and after that, we don't know everything about what transpired, but what we do know is that he was not properly looked at by medical staff at the jail, and he also was not getting his insulin again. Now, I guess I should go back just a little bit. He had written to family and friends over the course of his time at the jail, saying that he feared that he was going to die there because of the neglect, the medical neglect that he was suffering under. And in the end, on the morning of Tuesday, the 19th of January, he was clearly in a bad state, and other inmates in the pod around him were aware of that, and I think he had collapsed, and they were pressing their emergency buttons to try to get jail staff to come. And numerous accounts were that the officer on duty that morning, Eric Boria, did not come right away. And when he did come, or when someone came to check on Matthew, he was dead. So that is the sort of the sketch, the basics of what we know about Matthew's death. When we did make this public, we made media aware of it, and then they confirmed this death at the detention facility on Thursday, the 21st of January. We put something out on our blog, amplifyvoices.com, and then immediately were contacted by the daughter of Dennis McMurray, who told us that a similar thing happened with her dad last year. When she says similar, it was a situation where he was clearly in a bad state, was asking for help, and he didn't receive the attention that he needed, and he died in the jail. It wasn't, beyond that, the circumstances weren't the same, but she recognized the story that we told about Matthew as being similar to what happened with her father. The ways that those two things come together is that the jail, the sheriff's department, was, in the case of Matthew, was not going to make it public that he died there. It's because we made it public that it came into the public consciousness. And, you know, and that's because of people on the inside who wanted to speak out about it. And then, over the course of the time after his death, his family began speaking out about it. In the case of Dennis, his death was never made public. It wasn't made public until, again, we came forward with it, and then it was confirmed with the jail. Media, the mainstream media, did confirm it with the jail. Another thing that happened hasn't been talked about so much, and that's mostly because we haven't been in contact with anyone in his family or any of his friends, but another person died in the jail in August, August 31st of 2015, by the name of Raphael Bennett. His death, not much is known about it, but seems similar to Dennis's in some ways, in that he seemed to have not been at the jail very long and died the next day or the same day that he was admitted. I guess the one more thing I should say is, you know, none of this surprises us in any way, because we have accounts from people who have been inside the jail, numerous accounts of people not getting the medical attention that they need. Yeah, making medical calls and not getting seen. Of course, when they do get seen, they're charged $20, which was something that a fee that was doubled on July 1st of this past year, which is just really galling that they did that. But anyway, a situation where as sad and you know, tragic as it is, we have to say that we're not really surprised that Matthew died in the way that he did, or that these other people died there, and that we didn't know about it, although obviously we wish we would have.
You mentioned the mainstream media reacting or engaging with the information about the prisoner deaths, and how has, because before the, so we had talked in June of 2015 about the lockback situation at the Durham County Jail, and it sounded like, because of the engagement of community members and folks involved in Inside Outside and also family members, that it pressed the media to start asking questions. Is that the same case now? Are they actually like engaging with the sheriff's department and the county administration around medical neglect?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, definitely more so than they were before. I'm not going to belabor a critique of mainstream media, but, you know, they have really short memories, and, you know, something doesn't stay in the news cycle for very long, and they don't do a great job of following up on things in general. But they have, you know, questioned the sheriff's department about this, and I would say that it has stayed in the news somewhat. But I think what they've allowed is that the sheriff's department has told people, in the case of Matthew's death, directed media to question Correct Care Solutions, which is the medical provider at the jail. And so that was his kind of out. That was his way of saying, well, it's not really on us. If it's a case of medical neglect, you know, then you have to direct all your questions to Correct Care Solutions, which is a corporation that's headquartered in Tennessee and incidentally has come under a lot of fire for situations in other county and state facilities in other states, as well as in North Carolina. So they've kind of allowed him to have that easy out. This also comes at the same time as a community-based jail investigation team has been pressing for basically to have access to the jail to survey inmates, inspect facilities, and several other demands that the investigation team is making, including having a record of when people are allowed out of their cells, basically to check if they're that what they said about the end of the lockback is actually true. And the jail and the sheriff's department wants nothing to do with that, even though there's growing demand and support for a community-based investigation. And so they're trying to do everything they can to prevent that from happening and to ultimately uphold their own power and their own legitimacy.
Have they reacted to the efforts of folks involved with Inside Outside? Like, has the administration or the sheriff actually, like, engaged with y'all at all, or just sort of ignored and chosen to engage with the easy game of the media?
Mostly doing it for the media, and a lot now through the sheriff's own Facebook page and Twitter account, which is interesting. I think, well, and part of that has to do with one of the things that we asked people to do directly in the time after Matthew died was to basically blow up their Facebook page and Twitter accounts with questions. And they were somewhat responsive to the people asking questions in that case. But since that time, it seems like they've kind of pulled back and they're going to just put out press releases and then also positive stories about detention officers and positive stories about the things that they're doing in the community. And coincidentally, in November late November or early December, the Sheriff's Department in Durham got a new public information officer, and that person happens to be someone who used to be on one of the television news stations here. So she went from, being a news person to now
constructing the news.
Constructing the news, yeah. And another interesting tidbit is the fact that last year, when Dennis McMurray's daughter she actually tried to get the fact that her father died she tried to, basically bring this to someone, and she didn't know about us, and we didn't know about him dying, and so there was no connection there at the time. But she actually was interviewed by Tamara Gibbs, the person who now is the public information officer for the jail. She was interviewed by her, and they never ran the story. I'm not saying that one is directly related to the other, but it's just, it is what it is. But like you said, now she's constructing the news and constructing it for the sheriff's department in a way that is doing everything they can to spin stories the way that they want them, of course. Back in the fall, two officers basically were brutalized a female inmate at the jail, and ultimately, because we ran the story on our blog, and also because that woman was really fierce and really outspoken and didn't care about putting her name out there, ultimately what happened was those two detention officers were fired, and charges were briefly brought against them, and I don't know where that's all at now, but they're in the business now of finding scapegoats and throwing people, or in the case of Correct Care Solutions, throwing another corporation under the bus and never actually taking responsibility for anything as a county institution. So they've thrown those DOs under the bus. They've thrown Correct Care Solutions, at least, if not under the bus, then saying, direct all your questions to them. And never have they taken responsibility and said, Matthew DeCane died here at the jail. Dennis McMurray died here at the jail. Raphael Bennett died here at the jail. They never even said any of those things publicly until they were forced to. And they've definitely never said that, they were responsible for it, but they are.
And that seems to be one of the one of the major concerns that people raise when talking about the privatization of elements of incarceration is not only the inherent danger of someone expecting to make a profit off of the imprisonment of another person in some sort of quote unquote justice scenario, but also the lack of accountability and follow through. So, I mean, even if so, you're getting directed to a PR person for some corporation that happens to have a contract that's based in a totally different state. Even if you were to, what could you expect to get out of that? If not, maybe that contract gets withdrawn and they start working with Aramark or some other company that has just as bad of a track record.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's all a matter of deflecting. And yeah, it's a huge problem that, we're being directed. And when I say we, I just mean anyone here in Durham who's cares about this or anywhere who cares about it. They're being directed to call this corporation in Tennessee that, what are they going to do about it? What kind of an answer are they going to give? And how public is it going to be? How transparent are these interactions going to be? So yeah, I imagine it's really frustrating for people who are wondering what happened here. And the sheriff's department doesn't want to take any responsibility for it. And I think, like you said, I think that's replicated in lots and lots of cities throughout the country.
So outside of it, it's interesting to hear that the posting on y'all's website gets the attention, actually does draw the attention of the law enforcement and the prison there in Durham. Besides posting online and suggesting that people engage over social media with these institutions, what else have folks involved in Inside Outside been doing around these cases of medical neglect?
So as far as cases that we have known about previously, we work with people, try to get their stories out there, try to put them in touch with possibly with lawyers where that makes sense. Well, we have some connections with lawyers. But what have we done in the case of these deaths? We've been in contact with two of the families and people who are close loved ones of both Matthew McCain and Dennis McMurray, trying to figure out what their specific demands are that they want to do in going forward in terms of, what they want to do to demand something of the sheriff's department or of the county or whoever. Just for an example, Dennis McMurray's daughter has never gotten his property, was never given to her, never released to her. She also was never given an investigative report of what actually transpired at the jail when Dennis was brought in. And he had been arrested by county sheriff's deputies and then brought to the jail. So there wasn't even city police bringing him into the county jail or anything like that. It was purely a county thing all along. So, she would like to have the investigative report. She pressed on that for months and never got anything. So, that might be something that we could support her in pushing for. In a more generalized or universalized kind of way, we did call for a march and rally a couple of weeks ago. That was on a Saturday afternoon, and a number of people came out. A number of people from Matthew's family spoke, as well as Dennis's family, and we marched to the jail, and we're planning other things. People will know about those and hopefully participate in them. We'll have sort of a massive outpouring of rage as well as questioning of what's going on. I think each thing that happens, it's kind of like a powder keg at this point, I think, and we never know what might really kind of blow the roof off of what's going on there. But, as you referred to before, we actually had demonstrations at the jail for months and months. And I think all of that contributes in terms of organizing around these deaths and other instances of medical neglect.
I was part of a cop watch back in California, in Sonoma County, that was around for a few years. And one of the, I mean, besides getting in touch with folks who, getting in touch with family members of folks who had been killed by law enforcement, and just bringing them together and like hearing what people wanted, like the instances of like deaths in the jail that we became aware of were all like medical neglect things. Like one person, I remember, this is in like 2007, one person died of DTs, like detox tremors, could have been treated. One person died of lack of treatment for sickle cell anemia, which took a long time to kill the person. And apparently family, like his mom kept coming by to try to visit him, and the guards were like, no, he's not going to see you. Oh, well, he's not going to see you because he refuses to get dressed. And it's like he's doing some sort of protest thing. Oh, well, it's not that he, you know, as time goes on, these different answers come up. Well, it's not that he's like refusing to get dressed. It's that he can't get out of bed. You know, oh, well, he just passed or whatever. Like, yeah, it's so insane. These are human lives that just get thrown away. And the other instances of people who were getting shot by police were people who were definitely having a mental health crisis, and oftentimes their family had called for like an ambulance or some sort of help. Sometimes they had like a baseball bat or a knife or something like that, but in a lot of cases it was just like they're just acting out. They need someone to de-escalate them. I'm afraid for them. I'm maybe afraid for myself. But the police, you know, since all the infrastructure around like outpatient mental health has gotten was destroyed during the Reagan administration, you know, it's the police that show up, and their intention is never to de-escalate. It's, oh, I feel threatened, bam, bam, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Absolute insanity.
Yeah, I mean, we regularly go to the jail, whether it's to visit with people or to just talk with people who are visiting, and in talking with people since the deaths have become public, we've run into a lot of people who have shared with us instances of medical issues that are going untreated that we didn't know about. Actually, a person told me a couple weeks ago about a friend of theirs who had sickle cell anemia and was not getting the kind of help that he needed. And the way that you put that about people dying slowly, I mean, I think that's kind of the way that we are framing what's going on there. You know, it's in the case of Matthew, he died rather quickly. There was an altercation, and things got bad for him quickly. But he had felt for months that he was going to die at the jail, and had told people in his family that. And so, you know, it's kind of like it wasn't a surprise, even though it was horrible, and they couldn't believe it, but at the same time they could, because he had been saying that it was going to happen. And you know, I feel like it's like the jail is killing people either in a quick way or in a very slow way, but you know, not caring about the way that people are treated and the kind of mental health or physical health and attention that they need for those things is killing them. So
there's ostensibly a social contract that the state is operating under in terms of the population. And if someone is convicted of a crime, like even if we're going to like argue under the standards of like legality and criminality and right, wrong, and incarceration being a foundational principle that's okay to deal with, if somebody's being taken into a prison, being held, they're being fed, they're being given water, they're being given programs, like what their charge and their conviction and what sentence is handed down to them in these instances is not on paper or in the public mind like an execution order or a possible execution order, or we're putting you on, you know, some sort of island to combat each other. Like, it's not, it's, this person is being put here and is under the protection of the state during this period of time during which they do their time and are punished by doing their time and then are released back out. That's why there's an end to people's sentences. And like, it's just incredible that so much of like in so across the United States and in the Durham County Jail, there's such a lack of accountability, or the assumption apparently on the behalf of the jailers that people going in don't necessarily have to come out alive, and that's an okay thing somehow.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, it's I feel like it has almost gotten to the point where, and not just here in Durham, I think, you know, across the U.S. and, you know, maybe throughout the world, but that it is somehow normal. That's something that we absolutely have to combat. I mean, it is not normal for a 29-year-old to die in a jail. It's not normal for a 52-year-old who was otherwise healthy before he went in, to die in the jail. And, yeah, that's a very real thing that we have to combat, because people are beaten down in such a way, they almost accept things as being okay or normal, but they're not.
And that's something that I see that's really important about the work that you all do, is that especially not only just making a ruckus about, about this being a normalized thing in the communities in which you live, but also working to get the actual voices of the people most affected, whether they be the family members and loved ones on the outside or the folks that are on the inside that are experiencing it, like that delegitimizes and undermines, for me at least in so many ways, the work of prisons as this tool of breaking up families and communities and isolating individuals. More from our conversation with Steve from Inside Outside Alliance after this musical break. So let's listen to Usher with Chains featuring Nas and Bebe Borelli. And this is available off of Tidal.
With liberty and justice for all. Justice for all.
I'ma give my, you should get yours too. Shoot. Men and boys always shoot.
American dream, American men too. Shoot. Western boys always shoot.
And I am so tired of being insecure. So tired of, I've had enough running enough. To sum it up, y'all give a fuck. I had enough, y'all give a fuck. No.
Saving us, it's in the same. Man, I like I made it up. You blaming us. You keep it 100, you gay to dangerous. It's in the chains. 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 It's in the chains.
You put the shame on us.
Nah. Shame on us. Nah.
American school, now we in church too. Shootin', we the prey, always shoot.
I'ma be trail, you should be trail too. Shootin' ain't my God, only time we just shoot. And I am so tired of being insecure.
So sum it up, don't give a fuck off.
Light it on fire.
Yeah. Yo, check. I am Sugar Ray Robinson, Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois. I'm the modern one, yelling at senators, presidents, congressmen. We got a problem that needs some acknowledgement. I am no prison commodity, not just a body you throw in the cell for any reason just to bother me, just for your quota. So it's rest in peace of Sean Bell. Sleep in peace, every Ghana, every street, every corner. Conspiracy, new order. I spoke to Tamir Rice's mama. She told me be strong. It won't be long till it's justice. They want to vote, won't refuse the discussion on how certain cops face shooters for nothing. Revolution is coming.
You wear like a chain.
The land of opportunity.
You put me in chain.
The land of unity.
You wear like a saving.
Brotherhood, trust.
It's the same.
America.
Man, I like I made it up. You
but you know.
If you be 100, you can't name us.
Again.
Now that I've ranted a little bit, so when we spoke in June, and you mentioned a little bit earlier, when we spoke in June about the Inside Outside Alliance and the protests that were going on, they were in a large part concerning the lockbacks. Can you explain what was going on in Durham County, and is this practice still being used? You mentioned that it's still kind of vague as to if it's ended.
In early March of last year, and I'll just talk about this really quickly, but early March of last year, there was a jail-wide lockback where people weren't allowed out of their cells but 2 hours every few days. And we, you know, this came to our attention, and we started to protest, and then fairly quickly, they changed it so that people were allowed out 2 hours a day, and then that was changed to be 4 hours a day. And then in October, due to continued protesting and other things that we were doing, the jail decided to allow people out what they said was 8 hours a day, but is really more like about 6.5 hours or so. And so that, in some cases, they're still locking people back and not giving any explanation and doing it for basically collectively punishing people for things that are vague. Inmates don't even know why they're being locked back. And the jail administration tried to say in October that people were allowed out 8 hours, and in actuality it was about 6.5. And the thing is that previously people had been able to get out for a walk at night between the hour of 9 and like 10:30, and that has not ever been put back into practice as far as we know. And so that's where it's a little bit vague, like, is this actually full restoration of, recreation time or time allowed out of cell that people used to have? So we continued to protest at the jail on Fridays to protest not only the lockback, but also the other things that we knew were going on inside. Things as small as whether people were allowed to have pencils inside their cells, and things as, and not to say that that's not important, it is hugely important, but also things like people not getting insulin who are diabetic. So all those things.
You've mentioned earlier on that the website for the project is amplifyingvoices.com, and that's where people can keep up on some of the words of prisoners that get brought out, as well as related news stories and upcoming events. Are there any upcoming protests or ways for people out in the wider public, whether in the Durham or Eastern North Carolina area or not, can get engaged with what's going on around these deaths in the Durham County Jail?
We don't have anything planned or scheduled right now, but we do, as we did in the days after Matthew's death, we encourage people to write statements, do their own things as much as possible. We're not a clearinghouse or, you know, the controllers of anything here in terms of organizing around these jail deaths. We definitely will, and we will take a role in that, and we'll let people know about what is planned. We definitely plan to hold the sheriff accountable for his role or his ultimate responsibility as the person who oversees the jail. And we also plan to bring this out into the consciousness of the community in a big way in the weeks and months to come. So that's all I could say for now. One thing that I would love to get in is the fact that there is a Memorial and Justice Fund that was created by Matthew's family that I know people might have some hesitancy to contribute to such things, but I'm still going to put it out there, and I would encourage people to do so if that was okay with you.
Yeah, totally.
Link. So it's called Matthew's Memorial and Justice Fund. It's a GoFundMe. So if you go to GoFundMe.com and then / 8BJGHRWK, but I assume you can just
I'll put a link into the blog post about it.
That would be sweet. And you could also get to it if you visited the Inside Outside Alliance Facebook page. We have it linked on there. So I would encourage people to contribute to that as a way of, you know, people die and it costs a lot of money, especially when, you know, it's unexpected and the person is young. So that would be a great show of solidarity. But yeah, I would definitely encourage people to check out our website or blog to see what's happening in the coming weeks.
And Matthew was a father too, right?
He was, yeah. He had two daughters, and the one daughter was born in December, and he never met her. So just kind of heartbreaking to think about. Yeah. So that, I know that the Memorial and Justice Fund will be going to his family for the costs of his funeral and other things related to that. His girlfriends might have in the future some kind of a fund for his youngest daughter, the one who he didn't meet. And yeah, so that's all I can say about it now, but yeah, I would definitely encourage people to contribute to that fund.
I'm also looking on the Facebook right now, and there's links to, and we haven't talked about it on the show, but media has somewhat covered it, at least like activist media or whatever, the series of raids that have been going on around the U.S., ICE raids, ostensibly around folks that have come in over the last couple of years from Central America. But would you want to say like a brief thing about that at least?
There was a young man, and not to make it a localized thing, because it's not just local, and it's not just North Carolina. Although I guess there was a focus on North Carolina, South Carolina, and I can't remember the other state now for these raids. But a young man who was getting ready to go to school was snatched a couple weeks ago by ICE agents who didn't even present themselves as ICE agents, and his family was inside of the house, and they could see it happen all in front of them. And I believe he's in a detention center in Georgia. It might actually be in South Carolina. I'm not sure. But we were encouraging people to call in response to that and demand that, first of all, that he be released, as well as the other people who were snatched away from their families, but also for these raids to stop immediately. They're just, unconscionable, although not surprising, because so much of what is done is unconscionable.
So looking at the flyer that's up on the website, is this Wildon David Guillen Acosta?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
From Durham.
Wildon was a high school student at Riverside High School, even though he's not attending right now. And an interesting thing that did come up in response to that was several of his teachers have spoken out against these raids. And actually, the Human Relations Commission tried to put together a support of his family and speaking out against the raids. And then at least one of the people on that commission didn't want to, but the city council did speak out against them. So for whatever that's worth.
It's nice to be relatively pleasantly surprised in these instances once in a while.
Yeah.
We can be not surprised about the belligerence of the system, but yeah. Well, I'll also put up information on the blog. And well, Steve, thanks a lot for taking the time to have this conversation and for all the work that y'all do out there.
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity.
We've been speaking with Steve from the Inside Outside Alliance, a group out of Durham that does solidarity of amplifying voices from people inside the Durham County Jail and connecting and reconnecting them with folks on the outside to bring transparency to the jail there.
And now we will have some music to take us out. We have three tracks. Firstly, we'll hear a very new band called Baden from Sydney, Australia, with track one off their 2015 demo, which is entitled iPhone versus Krusty Slice. You can find this this demo on crustwithstrings.blogspot.de. And next is a track from Goodsforlot, which is a one-person project from Salem, Massachusetts. And this track is off their 2016 self-titled release. And thirdly, we'll hear Rang, which is a black metal band from the Netherlands. This track is called Eulogy to Impermanence and is off their 2015 demo. Thanks to Crust with Strings and to Red and Anarchist Black Metal for making us aware of these bands.
Thank you.
You're listening to WSFMLP 103.3 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, and WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio. This show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, and you can email us with questions or suggestions at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net. If you'd like to, you can send us letters at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full calendar of events and a link to some of their catalog of books and zines can be found online at their website, firestorm.coop.